You're listening to an Airwave Media Podcast.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
So today we're going to do something a little different. Today I'm going to play an interview for the Jump In Feet First podcast with Amberlee Grant. Amberlee is a friend of mine, and she interviewed me about some of the concepts that are going into my book, The Purpose Code. She asked great questions, and we had a really deep conversation, and it was so good that I am going to replay it here for you today. So without further ado, this is Amberlee Grant from the Jump In Feet First podcast interviewing me about purpose.
Jordan, your history as a doctor would seem extremely successful to most people. It's something that in our society we thrive for. We want to be a doctor, a lawyer, an astronaut, an entrepreneur that makes 10 figures. But that doesn't bring something even more important to our life. Can you tell us a little bit about what was lacking for you and how you found it?
Certainly. So my father died when I was 7 years old, and he was a doctor. And I think because I looked at the world through the lens of a 7 year old, I somehow thought I was responsible. So the easiest thing to do was to decide I'm going to walk in his footsteps. If I could co-opt his sense of purpose and identity, all of a sudden I could fill the space that he left and the world would be good and I'd no longer be responsible and everything would be great. And that actually served me. It wasn't necessarily the most mature coping mechanism, but it totally served me. It drove me through high school and college and studying and medical school. But something happened when I started practicing medicine. I realized that the joy I thought I was going to have never came. And instead, I got all the burnout and the dreading going to work and the anxiety on Sunday nights. And it's not that I didn't like parts of being a doctor, but I realized that I had co-opted my father's version of purpose and identity, and they were no longer serving me. And so I did what most people do at that point. I started looking for a mad dash out. I didn't start looking for a better sense of purpose or identity. What I figured is my problem is my job. It's no longer fulfilling me. I need to leave my job. And that's when I discovered financial independence, and it became money. Money is the answer. If I can just become financially independent, if I just have enough money, I can get out of the situation that doesn't fit me and I'll be happily ever after. And of course, then I got there and realized that yes, it took care of my basic money problems, but it didn't give me a sense of purpose nor identity to take the place of what I was lacking. And so that was really my struggle, especially when I realized I was financially independent, is I had spent my whole life building a sense of purpose and identity that were really someone else's and that maybe served me in the short term, but wasn't serving me in the long term.
Yeah, I think a lot of people can connect with that, whether that identity comes from their parents or the community or some sort of social pressure that they felt when they were young or in their teen years. That is something that so many people can relate to. I myself cannot relate to that. It's really odd. I had growing up, my family was very detached, like emotionally from each other. And my parents are Scientologists. So our sense of identity actually wasn't as a family unit, but as individuals within a family. So my family very much believed like you raise a productive member of society and then you're done. So for me, a lot of people call their parents when they're in their 20s or, you know, late teens, and they call them every day when they're in college. And I just never had that connection to my family. So when I left home to move to Los Angeles, not to go to university, but just to get away, I had no one who had any like idea of what I should be. And I left it all behind. And so I had this opportunity to almost have a blank slate. And that to me was like the start of my journey of purpose, which was very rocky and difficult. But I can really understand that taking on someone's identity and then applying it to your own life and then looking back maybe 20 years and saying, whoa, that actually isn't me.
You know, there's no shortage of people telling you who you should be as a kid. So originally when we're little children, often we go and we play and we know what lights us up. And every little kid can tell you what they love doing and they'll naturally go towards that. But something happens when we get a little older, and it can be many different things. For me, it was the death of my father. But for a lot of people, it's just this idea of once they get to a certain age, it's like, okay, now you have to be serious and think about what you're going to do for a living. And all of a sudden, we start thinking about those major categories that society tells us we're supposed to fulfill, whether that's doctor, lawyer, firefighter, or major league baseball player. They're all out there. But nowadays, we also have social media and marketing and advertising, and they're all sending us these messages of what purpose is supposed to look like. So when you go on Instagram and see the influencer who's traveling around the world and making videos of all these exotic countries, it's very natural for you to say, I don't know what my sense of purpose is, but boy, doesn't that look exciting. Maybe that should be my purpose. And so we co-opt other people's sense of purpose. And the problem is most of the people trying to sell this to us are trying to either make money or get some advantage for themselves. Yeah. Whether, again, it's an influencer or it's a marketer who's selling a protein supplement and they're showing you pictures of six-pack abs, they're all trying to sell us a sense of purpose for their own needs. And society does that too, and our families do that. So there's no lack of forces trying to get us to be things that might not be innately appealing. And one part that's really similar in all these situations is usually the thing that they're trying to get us to become is really big and audacious and important. It's all about changing the world or having the most or being a billionaire. It's always a very outsized version of purpose, which is really difficult because most people will not get six-pack abs. Maybe they don't have the will. Maybe they don't have the time. Maybe they don't have the genetics. Most people won't really travel the world and go to all these exotic places all the time. Most people won't be influencers. And so these big, audacious versions of purpose that are being sold to us are setting us up for disappointment, failure, and anxiety because we don't really have the agency to accomplish most of these things. Only the very few do. And so that leaves the rest of us in a rut. And if you ask yourself, well, why does purpose cause people anxiety? And we know it does. Studies show that 91% of people get purpose anxiety at some point in their life. Why does purpose cause people anxiety? Because they're being told that their purpose is supposed to be this huge thing that often they don't have agency to achieve. And that feels bad.
And what do you call that, that big purpose?
So in my book, The Purpose Code, which comes out in January, and in a lot of the content I produce, I call it big P purpose. This is that big type of purpose. It's usually goal oriented. It's not process oriented. We're not talking about enjoying the things you do. We're talking about working really hard to get to an end point. And it's very scarcity mindset oriented. Only a certain number of people can get six-pack abs. Only a certain number of people can be Major League Baseball players. So for those very scarce few, there's success. For everyone else, there's failure. Big P purpose is very, very failable. It's like easy not to succeed. And so I think it often leads people to anxiety as opposed to what I think is a much more healthy version of purpose, which I call little P purpose.
Okay. If you had to think back, what would be something that was your big P purpose that you never achieved but caused you anxiety?
Oh, I think I had huge goals. Like, I wanted to be a New York Times bestseller, first and foremost. I want to be a New York Times bestseller. I want to write a book, and I want that book to get out to millions of people. Yeah. It sounds like a great goal in the beginning, and it sounds really, really exciting. But then again, you start realizing there's tons of great authors who never even get close to that. They're award-winning authors who sell only 1,000 books. Yeah. Yes, that's a goal and it sounds exciting, but the truth of the matter is it's very scarcity mindset oriented. The likelihood I'm going to achieve that is small and I only have a certain amount of agency, right? I'm not an Instagram influencer with a 5 million person following, which is kind of what you need nowadays to be a New York Times bestseller. So you start thinking about, well, that could be my sense of purpose, but I'm probably going to end up upset and unhappy about it and feeling like I'm not enough. What if I flipped it around and said, you know what? I love writing, and writing excites me. And when I sit down and I plan a book and I start writing, I get in this flow state where I'm enjoying myself, and I get to the end of it and I feel like I really accomplished something. Maybe that's what makes me more happy. And I can look for incremental gain. I can say I could become a better writer. I could take courses to learn how to write better. I could talk to more editors. I could even hire people to help me. All of those are kind of incremental gains that I have much more agency over. Mm-hmm. But being able to be a New York Times bestseller or not, there are a lot of things. You got to be the right person at the right time, saying the right things with a lot of luck. Yep. And a lot of times we might have two or three of those things in that formula, but not everything. So I think being a famous writer was one of those big P purpose things that I realized probably no longer suited me. Having a huge medical practice where I made tons of money and no patient ever had a bad outcome and I was perfect, and you know, all of those things were these kind of big audacious goals. And I found that reality didn't fit. Like, being a doctor isn't always fun. It's not always running in saving the day. A lot of times it's paperwork, it's unclear diagnoses, it's the difficult day-to-day drudge of dealing with health problems. And it didn't match that idea of what society told me I was supposed to be, what all of the movies tell you doctors are supposed to look like, et cetera.
Yeah, you just made this like jog my brain, because I can understand that when you're saying, I'm going to write a book. I think some of our role models are New York Times bestsellers, right? That's what we're seeing. We're not seeing that person who sold hundreds, thousands, millions of people who wrote that book and sold 5 to friends. They sold 1,000 to their small following. Because we don't see them. They aren't on the New York Times bestseller list. Like, we should have a list of like best books that sold the least, you know? And then we can start having those people.
And you know what happens? So yeah. Here's the kicker. If you write a New York Times bestselling book, I guarantee the amount of stress and pressure when you go to write that second book is actually going to be multiplied. I can't remember which Netflix special I was watching, but I was watching it about a college football coach, and his dream among dreams was whatever, to win the national championship or the Orange Bowl or whatever it is. I don't know enough about football.
Yeah.
But it's funny because it was such his dream, and he won it his first year at a new college, but his life went progressively downhill after that because the pressure to do it again and to top himself. And what that is that's loss aversion. So even if we reach that big audacious goal, we become petrified that we're going to lose it or not be as relevant anymore. So even meeting those big goals doesn't necessarily make us feel good, which is, I think, something we notice also in financial independence. A lot of people make their big audacious goal financial independence, which is actually highly achievable. So it's not like a lot of these big goals people pick, but they find that once they get there, that it actually wasn't what truly gratified them. And they find themselves feeling disconnected and lost, as opposed to that nirvana state they think they're going to hit once they get there.
Yep. That I see all the time. Being really involved in the financial independence space and running my own community of FinTalks, that's like literally what it's about, right? It's about these people. I would say, you know, 1/3 of FinTalk members are financially independent. And every single one of them talked about their journey of a goal, not a purpose, of achieving their goal of financial independence, whatever that might be, scarcity mindset coming in, being afraid, one more year syndrome, having nothing to retire to. And it's almost like the doctor, like the story of you being a doctor. You decided you needed to like stop being a doctor, essentially. Like, this was the problem in your life. But that's not necessarily the case, right? You don't need to run away from something. You need to run towards something. And I think that saying is really important, because when you're running towards something, it means that you've taken years to figure out what that thing is, to start doing it and incorporating it into your life, so that when other parts of your life start to go away, that thing maybe takes more space or evolves into something newer, different, greater. And like, I love that, because for me, again, I feel like I was really lucky in my younger years to find sense of purpose in different places. I consider life as chapters. So like every piece of my life has had a certain chapter. And when I look back, I might not notice I'm in a new chapter or that they're transitioning, except for there may be some uncomfortability and things going on. Sometimes it's very apparent. There's a breakup that happens and the new chapter starts as a single person. But what I've noticed is that in each part and each chapter of my life, I've felt a sense of contentment moving forward. And there's been two running lines with me. So things that are just constantly with me. And that is one, building community, no matter where I am, which country I'm in, doesn't matter. Like I'm in Australia, I've built a community somehow. I'm going to lunch with friends or whatever it might be. I'm joined a climbing community. I'm either joining community or creating it myself. And that has been since I was a child. My mom tells a story where when I was like 7 years old, I would go around to all the neighbors with their kids because we had a very kid-heavy neighborhood. And I would get 25 cents from all the parents. I would take and walk all the kids to McDonald's and we would go get a McDonald's ice cream cone. And so I'd pay for all the ice cream cones. The kids would play in the play place. I would like sit there and like hang out on those spinny chairs that McDonald's had, if you remember those, like having my ice cream cone. And then I'd walk the kids back. And this is since I was like 7 years old. And just building community has been this really, you know, that's like line with me. And the other one is saying yes. That I want to talk about your spaghetti theory in a second, because to me, that's been something that I've really done in my life, which is just try new things, say yes. There's a movie called Yes Man that just really resonated with me. And I was like, I got to live my life much more like Jim Carrey in Yes Man and just try new things. And to me, those things have carried me through to look back and be like, wow, like I lived life to the fullest and it felt good.
I think you actually, believe it or not, I think you go in the opposite direction most people go. So what I've found is generally people suffer from traumas and stress and generational issues that make them feel not enough. It's really an enough problem. Mm-hmm. And so they decide that I'm going to feel enough if I just do this big audacious thing, whether it's financial independence, whether it's this big audacious purpose, whatever it is. If I can achieve that thing, or if I can make enough money, I can fill this hole of enough and I'm going to feel good. Mm-hmm. The problem is then they either get there and succeed and realize that they still don't feel enough.
Yeah.
Or they don't get there and they fail and it just makes them feel all over again like they're not enough. I think the problem that people really face is enough has nothing to do with purpose and it has nothing to do with the present and future. If you really want to answer the enough question, it's about your past. It's about dealing with your generational trauma and the trauma of your childhood and coming to terms with the fact that you are always enough and you're already enough and you are more the hero of your past than the victim. And if you can get there, then it's really easy to walk into purpose because purpose is about your present and your future. And if you feel like enough, all of a sudden you don't need your purpose to fulfill a sense of enough. You don't have to go towards purpose to make yourself feel like you're a good person because you already feel like a good person. And once you're there, then purpose becomes really, really abundant. The pot of gold at the end of the rainbow is once you start pursuing purpose, it naturally builds a community around you. And I think community is actually what makes people really light up and be happy. You're interesting because you kind of went backwards and you just started building community right away. But a lot of people have to go that stage of understanding their past and feeling enough, then building a life of purpose around something that's deeply important to them. And that leads to community and connections, which makes them happy.
Yeah. I think when you're saying that, that makes a lot of sense where a lot of people will they'll pursue the goal and the goal can be a lonely road, depending, right? Every goal is different. So I don't want to just categorize goal setting or that kind of thing it can be lonely. Financial independence is a very independent goal. You're not playing soccer with a bunch of people and scoring goals, right? You're literally like on a spreadsheet, like saving as much as you can. And it might actually be an antithesis to building community because you don't want to spend the money to be with friends, to go to a cruise with fin talkers. You know, that might be something that you block yourself off of. And then again, you get to the end of the goal and you're like, oh man, I've got nothing here. No friends, no family, no nothing. I think I took that trauma. So I've got a lot of background that people will learn through this podcast. I got a lot of issues from I've dealt with a lot of issues from my family and my childhood. And I remember like two choices I made when I was young was one, I realized I would not be able to learn from my family what it was like to be normal. So I had to look outside myself. And so that meant I had to build community and I had to find friends and family, like literally family of friends, that would show me what it was like to be normal, like what it was like not to yell and scream and be physically abusive and do all these crazy things that was happening at my house. And I saw like, oh, some people can just work for the government and they come home and they drink their tea and then they like make dinner and they like go to bed. Like, oh, that's a life I could lead. Like, oh, there's entrepreneurs out there. They own a, you know, a furniture company. Like they seem to have a good time. So maybe I should like look at that. And so I think that I took this and was like, whoa, I can just settle into this life or I can like gather information and then go into someone else's life. And so I think that that was that drive for community for me was to literally get away from that. And I guess, lucky me, it served me well. I didn't know what I was doing back then, but that really worked out.
Yeah. And it sounds to me like you already knew you were enough. So you didn't have enough problem because someone who has enough problem won't go seeking those things because they don't yet feel they deserve it. And so they have to go out into the world and prove that they deserve it before they can allow themselves those things.
Yeah.
And I don't think you had that issue.
No, I had made a decision when I was really young to separate myself from my family. Like I remember I wished upon a star that I would leave, like I would endure until I turned the age I was allowed to leave the house. And I would, you know, there's no Google back then. So I was like, I think that's like 17 or 18. Like I read it in books. People run away at 16, but it seems too young because then it seems like life is struggle at that point. So let's just finish high school, do my thing and then leave. And so to me, it was like, if I can separate myself from them, then I can be enough. But right now I just have to endure what's going on around me and learn from them in good ways and bad ways, because my family has also taught me so much, which I'm very grateful for. For you, what was that turning point for knowing that you were enough, that you were no longer the problem or the reason why your father passed away and you were no longer responsible for holding up your family and other things?
You know, I think I started really understanding that more in college, and I think I started letting myself off the hook. It's been a continual process. But as my love affair with medicine started to end, I realized that the only thing keeping me there was this belief that this is what I was supposed to do.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden the evidence was like, maybe it isn't. Like, maybe this isn't fulfilling you. Maybe all those stories you've told yourself, while beautiful and important and created lots of good in my life, also didn't allow me to be my best self. And looking back, it's so obvious, but it wasn't then. Like, I was embarrassed of being a doctor. You know how people go to medical school and the first thing they want to do is call a restaurant, make a reservation and say, Dr. So-and-so, right?
Yeah.
I didn't want to tell anyone what I did for a living. I would go to parties and I would like shy away and shrink away so that I didn't have to tell people what I did for a living. Like that should have been a huge sign to me. I didn't have a lot of doctor friends. I didn't like hanging out in doctor places. All of those things should have been real signs to me that this wasn't fitting, but I ignored them. And so there became a point where it became difficult to ignore, where I was living that life and I was going through the paces and I'm like, this just isn't serving me anymore.
Yep. Yeah, that makes so much sense for someone to look at their life and then be like, whoa, here's the story. Here's the story I told myself. Here's what I got into because of that story. And then you're like, you don't even want to make a reservation at a restaurant with your new title that you've worked so hard for.
Yeah.
I
talk about a lot, especially in coaching and on the podcast, about those kind of childhood narratives that we tend to fulfill even if we're not meaning to. And so I definitely have a running childhood narrative. My father died when I was 7. And my mom spent my whole childhood telling me how perfect and wonderful and special he was, like about everything, which really sounds good, right? That's what a little kid wants to hear. But instead, I got this message that that's what success looks like. And so you have to be like that. And so it's been very hard for me because the narrative is I'm supposed to be as good as my dad, but even my dad wasn't as good as my dad. What I got were the loving memories of someone who had passed away and the heroic stories that my mom told to me so that I would feel connected to this person who wasn't in my life. But then I took that on as this is what being good looks like. And so I've had to continuously fight that narrative in my life. But I found that when I let go of it, I can be much more authentic and intentional and start doing things that just fill me up.
Yeah.
And so I think we all have these narratives that chase us from childhood. I call it generational trauma. We have good things too, and I call that generational growth, right? We have good things that we learn from our families that serve us in the future and that we pass on to the next generation. But we also have these kind of traumatic narratives. And so the idea for most of us, if we want to get to this place of enough and then pursuing authentically a life of purpose that isn't hurried or rushed or goal-oriented, but just fills us up, we've got to look back at some of those narratives and come to terms with them and realize that I wasn't a bad kid. My father dying wasn't my fault, and I can still be good on the inside and not live up to those stories my mom tells me about him because I'm already enough and it's already fine. And I've already done all I need to do. And if I die tomorrow, I've lived a practical, successful life. And so if I can free myself of that, and I think if we can all free ourselves of that kind of I'm not enough thing, we then can find a purpose is way more abundant and less scarce than we think. You are listening to my interview on the Jump In Feet First podcast with Amberly Grant, and we are talking purpose. We're going to take a short break. I'm Doc G, and this is the Earn and Invest podcast. Are you struggling to close deals? B2B selling is tougher than ever, and that's why I want to tell you about LinkedIn Sales Navigator. LinkedIn Sales Navigator is a sales intelligence platform that helps professionals effectively prospect and engage high-value customers, drive higher revenues, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator helps you target the right buyers, surface key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and shows you hidden allies so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date, first-party data enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/earn. That is linkedin.com/EARN for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/earn and get started. This episode is brought to you by Range Rover Sport. Range Rover Sport leads by example. With a visceral, uncompromising, and dramatic feel, this car helps you rise to the occasion. How does it do that? Range Rover Sport has powerful on-road performance and commanding all-terrain capability by combining assertiveness with signature Range Rover refinement. This is the car that redefines sporting luxury. The new Range Rover Sport features advanced cabin technologies such as active noise cancellation and cabin air purification, purposeful cockpit-like driving position, and award-winning Pivi Pro infotainment is at the heart of the experience and provides intuitive control of the vehicle systems. Design your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. Once again, explore and build your Range Rover Sport at LandRoverUSA.com. USA.com. That's LandRoverUSA.com.
How do you feel like this change for yourself has affected other people? Because, you know, you're quitting your job. You're, not quitting, but you're doing a different job. Your kids, right? You've raised your kids in a certain way with this mentality, and then you're changing. But they might not know to the extent of how much you've changed. It might not be communicated to them. It's just a shift. What does that look like?
I think when you start living a life that feels more purposeful and intentional and start doing things that light you up, you change the world in so many ways. So when I went from being a doctor who didn't feel like they were making a difference and not enjoying my life to being a content creator, an author, a writer, I started blogging and then podcasting My blog went to hundreds of thousands of people. My podcast has gone to millions of people. And then I wrote a book. And every time I get an email of, oh, your book kind of said something, it made me think and it made me change how I do things. And I'm a lot happier now. You realize that those ripples in the ocean caused by that little drop or pebble of purpose you drop into it carry. And they carry not just for miles, but for years and decades and even generations. So who knows what my kids will see in me, and that'll affect who they become. But what my goal is I want to model for them the behavior of someone who's living a life of purpose intentionally and doing things that lights them up. Because I want them to become adults who do things that lights them up. And I think if we can create that, that's that whole generational growth instead of generational trauma. Instead of handing to the next generation all those bad and difficult stories and narratives that many of us mindlessly carry on and just push on to the next generation, what if we could show them growth? What if we could show them people doing things that are thoughtful and purposeful that are just kind of slowly and locally changing the world? Because I think if you want to have global impact, you have to have a local effect. And so you can go for global impact right away, but those are those kind of big audacious goals. But if you go for a local effect, the likelihood is eventually you're going to have global impact anyway.
It's a ripple effect, just like you're saying. It's one by one. And that's the way I've always considered any change. It really is change yourself. Then you change your like your immediate circle, whatever that looks like. And people will come and go because of that change. And that's okay. And then, you know, those people go and change and et cetera, et cetera. And I think, like you said, it's a ripple effect that you can have in the world.
And when you pursue purpose, you naturally pull people towards you, not just family members, but communities of people who dig similar things. And you become mentor to them, and they become mentor to you and other things, and you become teacher and student, and you get this really nice reciprocal relationship that can change the world. And I think it not only brings inner happiness, because there are tons of studies that show that actually our relationships with other people are probably what truly brings us happiness more than our money, our jobs, and all those kind of things. The Harvard Men's Study is a big one that's been going on for decades and decades and decades, which is connected pretty much our relationships with our sense of happiness. Yep. And the way often we get there is through purpose, doing things we dig. You dig cars, you write a blog about cars, or you go work on cars, you are likely to get other gearheads around you who love cars. And before you know it, you're swapping stories, you're doing projects together. And those kind of things build and create these communities of people, I think, who support each other and who make a much better life.
I want to talk a little bit about the generational healing. I think, so we call generational trauma, right? That's the things we bring with us that we need to, that may have served us at some point when we've reacted to them. So we might, you know, become a perfectionist, and that gets you through, you know, gets you through residency and med school and all those really difficult parts. I'm also a perfectionist because I saw some stuff that I was like, oh, if I'm not perfect, then someone's going to respond terribly. So I need to like make sure everything's okay. Turns out that's not a great way to live your life in your like late 30s, maybe mid 20s. Mistakes are really important. But one thing that my dad did do that was so incredible that I didn't realize until probably my late 20s was my dad has a saying. He's never worked a day in his life. My dad's an artist. My dad went to university. He studied mathematics and philosophy. So that's just like a nerdier type person. And then he saw the words art studio on a wall after working for IBM in Toronto. And he was like, that. It was just, he saw that and he knew. He could go make tons of money continuing to work for IBM in Toronto in his like early 20s, and he quit everything to learn how to draw and paint. He literally hitchhiked down to Los Angeles, slept on beaches and studio floors, and for the next 15 years became a really great artist. And had me and my sister when he was in his 40s raising us, he was an artist. So he made and sold paintings and different types of watercolors, et cetera. And he had an art studio. And so he taught others how to paint and draw. And literally my whole life, we didn't have money like at all. There's a reason I'm in the financial space is because I really wanted to pursue that part of life. But watching him truly never work a day in his life gave me a shift in perspective of what work was. And that to me is like something, a gift he could pass on to me where I've never hated a job. I literally, there are parts of jobs I don't enjoy. There are jobs that I look back and I'm like, I wouldn't do that again. But I have literally, like, I've been a house cleaner. I have worked in bars. I've worked in a bakery, waking up at 4 o'clock in the morning to be there at 5. I have been a bartender, a hostess, a waitress, a caregiver. I have cleaned people's, like, foreclosed houses in Phoenix, helped, you know, them to organize. And then I, work as a project manager. There's only one job I've ever hated, which was data entry at a university where I just like took one thing from a spreadsheet into another one. And I just could not find any purpose in that because there was the only part of that I liked was I was in the financial aid office. So I got to help people with their scholarship applications. And that was the only part of that job I really enjoyed. But I've never sat there and been grumbly about a job or needed to quit. And I'm not even like, I was literally cleaning toilets and I had no problem with it. And I would say that is my dad. And that mentality that he just constantly like never worked a day in his life, loves his job. So I just learned that like people love their job. So I love my job. And like, thanks, Dad. Appreciate it. Cause that's going to serve me well, no matter how long I work or whatever work looks like for me. So I feel really fortunate that that was something for him that he found purpose and passion in his life, pursued it to the fullest. Incredible artist, has helped so many people become, you know, their own artist. And I have been able to apply that in a whole other meaning to my life.
And I think in a sense, that's generational growth. So you can look and see all sorts of generational trauma. For you, this piece was generational growth. And so the key is how, when you're thinking about your own kids and your own family and your own friends, how to do more generational growth and less generational trauma. It's an interesting thing. So what your dad really did is, you know, your career can mean many things to you. And for some people, career and purpose have nothing to do with each other. And that's okay as long as you're intentional about it. In your case, the generational growth your dad gave you is he very much melded and combined career with purpose, and it very much worked with him. And you tried on that identity of his and found it works for you. And therefore, you now model that behavior, which will then again be an identity your child eventually will look and try on and see if it works for them. And that's what generational growth actually looks like.
Yeah. I didn't even think about that. My kid might try it on, but it might not work for them. They might not job. That's going to be really hard for me, right? Because I'll be like, why don't you, like, I've had that with partners. Like, why don't you like your job? That I feel judgmental towards them.
But here's the difference between generational growth and generational trauma.
Yeah.
Generational growth, when the next generation tries it on, if they like it and connect to it, great. And if they don't, it's pretty easy to walk away from. Generational trauma is not. Generational trauma are these narratives that are so deeply ingrained into who we are because we've experienced them so often during childhood that it's really hard to walk away from them. In fact, people feel stress and anxiety when they try to walk away from them, even if those narratives are making them miserable.
Yep.
And so that's the big difference, is it's really hammered into your head. Trauma, for whatever reason, really gets hammered into your head. Whereas generational growth, if it's done appropriately, the next generation says, oh, yeah, that's not my thing, and goes and looks for something else and then finds something else that they love. So they're very different in that sense.
Yeah, that gives me pause. That's a really important thing to remember for people. So, Jordan, if I'm someone who is lacking passion, purpose, meaning in my life, what are just some strategies I could use to find it?
First and foremost, this gets a little complicated, but I really think happiness is meaning and purpose. And what I found is a good deal of the population actually has a much more bigger meaning problem than a purpose problem. Okay. So to break it down, meaning is about our past. And it's about thoughts. And so meaning is all about our thoughts about the past. Happy people who tend to develop a great sense of purpose tend to tell themselves heroic stories about their past, even if they underwent trauma. So it's the classic story. And I think I'm an example of this. My father died when I'm 7. I don't see that as a tragedy. And he even sent me into being a doctor, which I didn't love. But I see that as this wonderful heroic story of me overcoming and learning who I really wanted to be so I can be happy today. So my sense of meaning about my past is this very positive, heroic thought process about what I went through. The story I tell myself about myself is a very positive, happy story. That's happy people who then have no problems with purpose. Yeah. The other side is people who tell themselves more of a victim story. They see their traumas. They have their narratives. They can't step outside of those narratives. They can't step outside of this fact that bad things happen to me, but that doesn't mean I'm a bad person.
Yeah.
And so they feel very much like victims. And so when they go to the present time, when their cognition, their thoughts, their sense of meaning from the past is a very negative, victim-oriented belief, when they go to the present and future and start trying to build purpose, the narratives they have are, it never worked out. And every time I tried, it got thrown back in my face and things don't work. So they have issues. So when you say, how does someone go about finding purpose? I actually say, first of all, we have to think a little bit about meaning and answer that question, am I enough? And the way you answer that question, am I enough, is you have to look at those narratives of childhood and maybe rewrite them in a sense to feel like you're a hero of the story instead of a victim. If you can get to that place and realize you're already enough, then starting to think about purpose is really easy, because you don't feel negative and you don't feel like it's going to blow up in your face, and you don't have all these holes of emptiness you're trying to fill, because you already did that with meaning and looking at your past. Now you can just authentically look at what you like. So if you can get to that place where you're feeling a little bit better about your past, you've dealt with some of your emotional traumas, and you have meaning a little bit better understood, purpose is all about your present and future. And it's not about thoughts. It's about actions. It's about what we do in our present and future. Remember, meaning is about our past and thoughts. Present is about actions in our present and future. So if you have a reasonable sense of meaning, then people rarely struggle with finding purpose if they don't innately know, right? If it doesn't hit them over the head, like when your dad saw Art Studio and knew.
Yeah.
Or, you know, I tell the story of Julia Childs often. Julia Childs was kind of afloat doing a million things. And then she had this meal in France for the first time, and she ate the food, and it was the most wonderful thing. And she's like, that is what I want to do. So some of us are lucky enough to be hit over the head and have that moment where we know, those aha moments. But let's say you're not one of those people.
Right.
If you're otherwise in a fairly healthy place, there's some really easy ways to go about thinking about what purpose looks like in your life. In my new book, The Purpose Code, I talk about five or six of them. The first one is one I actually talked about in my first book, Taking Stock, which is the life review. We do life reviews with dying patients, and they're all about, partially at least, about regrets. And so you ask yourself these series of structured questions about your childhood. What were your best moments? What were your worst moments? What were those key relationships in your life? What do you hope to accomplish now, etc.? When you're dying, it's often too late to go back and address those issues. But when you're young and healthy, like a lot of us are, you do this life review and you start saying, oh, these are the big regrets of my life. Well, guess what? You know, the word regret in someone who's young and healthy and has lots of years is actually just purpose. It's an anchor for purpose, right? So we're not looking to find purpose, because you don't find purpose, you build it. But we are looking for these anchors, these inklings of purpose, to then start creating or building a life of purpose around. So life review is a great way to start thinking about regrets and use them as an anchor to build new purpose. If that doesn't work for you, I often tell people to think back about childhood. Often kids, before they have purpose placed on them by society and family and marketing and social media, often they just do things they love. For me, it was baseball cards. I loved baseball cards as a kid. Eventually, I grew up and realized, oh, I can't do that for a living. I have to be a doctor, do all these other things. But that was a joy of my childhood. So if you can think about what were the joys of your childhood and why you stop doing them, sometimes it's easy to find an anchor there, and then you can start building a life of purpose around it. So if I felt like my life was really lacking right now, I could go back into baseball cards. I could start reading blogs about baseball cards. I could go to the baseball card shows. I mean, I love that life.
Yep.
That's purpose waiting for me to get involved with. I have other things going on, so I choose not to at the moment, but these anchors from our childhood are usually there. We just have to think about them.
When you're talking about this going back to your childhood, something that really triggers for me is talking to friends and family from that time period.
Yeah.
Right? You don't have to do this journey of purpose alone, because like you said, it's building it. It's a journey. That's there's an entire, you know, the pursuit of happiness, right? So it's a journey. And sometimes other people can have insights that you just don't even remember. And you're too locked up in your own stories and ideas and maybe even like that goal of finding purpose, which is a goal then at that point, not a building of purpose. Asking them. When I told my mom that I was building, you know, a community of financial nerds, she was like, oh yeah, like that makes sense. Like you used to do the ice cream thing. You've always had a community. And I was like, oh, you knew this. I had no idea. Like I've been searching for this for years. And so I think talking to those people is really important.
Ask your parents what happened when they finally boxed up your room after you left and became an adult. And what did they find? And your parents will be like, I found, you know, equestrian trophies and all these pictures of horses and all these horse magazines that were sitting around that you had left over from childhood. Right. Or I found, you know, all your basketball trophies and the basketball magazines and the drawings you used to do. And like, your parents actually may have a really good idea of what lit you up. You've just forgotten. You've moved on. You've become and evolved, but that doesn't mean that those things still might not be purpose anchors for you. And then I think there are a bunch of other ways. I mean, work is a great one. A lot of us say, oh, we're unhappy at work, and then we discard work completely. But maybe there's an anchor and an inkling of purpose within work. I knew that. I was getting tired of being a doctor, but the one thing I would do, even if I wasn't being paid for it, was the small part of my job, which was hospice work.
Right.
But that became the anchor that I could then build the life of purpose around. So even now, I don't think of myself as a doctor anymore. I don't really practice most of medicine, but I'm still a hospice medical director and spend about 10, 15 hours a week doing that. There was that kernel of importance there that was good enough that I knew that while my whole job didn't feel purposeful anymore, that piece of it did. And there's no reason to throw the baby out with the bathwater. If you're looking to walk away from work, at least spend some time thinking about, is there any part of work, even if it's a tiny part of work, that lights you up? And could that become a new anchor to something you do in the future? And then, of course, there's the spaghetti method, which you and I talked about, which is throw a bunch of spaghetti against the wall and see what sticks. So if you have no idea what your sense of purpose is, life with you didn't do anything for you, your parents can't clue you in and memories of childhood don't help, you hate everything about your current job, you know, just start saying yes. Start doing things you don't normally do, going places you don't normally go, saying yes to people you don't normally say yes to, and experience a bunch of new things. And if something you experience feels good, do more of it, pursue it further, take the next step. And so I think there's lots of great ways. Purpose is abundant. Yeah. And when we stop looking at it as goal-oriented and just say, what kind of things light me up that I could enjoy spending an afternoon doing? All of a sudden, purpose doesn't sound so scary anymore. It doesn't have to have an endpoint. It's just, what can I get myself involved in that lights me up? If you can start looking at it that way, purpose, again, becomes much less scary, much more abundant, much easier.
The elephant in the room in all of this, really, is the idea of change. I think purpose will equal change in your life. And there's always that thought, what happens next when I change? And like you said, you know, a few minutes ago, which is your life will get better. The life around you, the people's lives around you will get better because you'll become an inspiration. And change can be difficult and sometimes really is difficult. So you're going to have to walk through the mud to get to that next level of your life. And if right now is not hard enough for you to make that choice, to make a change, to go towards purpose, that's okay. Life will get hard enough and it will be glaring in your face, like at some point, that you don't have a choice, that you have to change. And then, you know, hopefully you don't get to that point because it's nicer to make the choice for yourself, but life will make you choose at some point to start moving towards a better direction. Or you'll end up on your deathbed and you'll have that life review and have regrets. And that's okay as well, because a life is a life and it is what it is.
I'm not nearly as optimistic as you are. I see people over and over again who life keeps on getting difficult and more difficult, and they keep doing the same things over and over again. They keep on getting the same results.
Yeah.
So I disagree with you on this one. I think if you're blissfully happy, don't change. But most of us are not blissfully happy. If you want new results, you're going to have to do something different. And when you do something different, you naturally are going to step out of your comfort zone and by definition, step into the uncomfortable. Yeah. And this is inevitable. But I don't agree with you that life will get uncomfortable enough where people change, because I see people both on their deathbeds as a hospice doctor, as well as when I do my purpose coaching, I see people so tightly holding on to those old narratives that it's just too fearful for them. And their lives literally get worse and worse and worse. Their relationships get worse. Their work life gets worse. They make lots of money, but it doesn't make them happy. So I don't 100% agree with that, because I do believe that people do run themselves into the gutter. And so it's incumbent upon you, if life is not happy, if you're not where you think you should be, if you want different results, you're going to have to do different things. If you want to keep having all the same things, just keep doing what you're doing.
I appreciate that. It is true. I don't see people at the end of their life, but I do see people in it. And as a 35-year-old, I see that path. I see the people who are pursuing whatever passion or like, you know, side hustles or doing the things that they're doing, but they're making choices in their life. And you can see that their life is progressively getting better. Things seem to be working out. And then I do see the people who it just keeps going. And you hear the same stories from them over and over. And eventually they keep on replaying them.
Yes. They keep on replaying their childhood trauma and narratives over and over again. And they always get the same results.
Yep. And thanks for that wake up call that, you know what? Life might not get hard enough for you to actually make a change. So you need to make a change. Absolutely love that, Jordan. Where can we find you? And if someone is having a really difficult time with that change, like how do they get help?
So the easiest place to find me is jordangrummet.com. That's JORDANGRUMET.com. There you can see basically links to the three ways I produce content. One is a medical blog, which I don't write on anymore, but I wrote on really from about 2004 to 2018. The other is a financial blog called Diversify. And last but not least, there's the Earn and Invest podcast, which is probably what I spend most of my time doing. You can also see links to my first book, Taking Stock. My second book is not up there yet because we're not at that point, but it will be soon. And as part of the Earn and Invest podcast, if you go onto that page, I am doing purpose coaching. So that's one-on-one coaching for people who are having issues with enough career and just generally feel like they've got their finances in order, or at least they know what to do with their finances, but it doesn't seem to be serving them. Best way to get there is earnandinvest.com/coaching.
Absolutely love it. I've gotten coaches in my life, and it's literally 8 sessions with my coach put me on an entire different path that I was not expecting, which has led me to the best life I have today. So I think coaching and just getting that exterior view, help, and some guidance from someone who's done it or is doing it is so helpful. Well, thank you so much for joining us today and talking about purpose and helping people make a big difference in their life. Because, you know, if you take one change, everyone, like, you don't know where it's going to lead, and it could lead to something absolutely incredible.
Thank you so much for having me. I totally enjoyed this conversation.
Earn and Invest is now part of the Airwave Media Podcast Network. Visit airwavemedia.com to listen and subscribe to this show as well as other fine podcasts.
Quick thank you to Amberly Grant of the Jump In Feet First podcast. It was a blast recording with her. And again, if you're interested in Path to Purpose coaching, go to earnandinvest.com/coaching. My book, The Purpose Code, will be out in January 2025. It is already on Amazon. Look it up, Jordan Grummet, The Purpose Code. You can go ahead and put your pre-order in now, but I haven't made the big push to marketing and talking about it. That will be over the next few months. But I'm really excited to get this message out to you. And thank you again for listening to the Earn and Invest podcast. Have a great rest of your week, and we'll see you next episode.
It feels really good to be productive, but a lot of the time it's easier said than done, especially when you need to make time to learn about productivity so you can actually, you know, be productive. But you can start your morning off right and be ready to get stuff done in just a few minutes with the Inc. Productivity Tip of the Day podcast. New episodes drop every weekday, so listen and subscribe to Inc. Productivity Tip of the Day wherever you get your podcasts. That's Inc. Productivity Tip of the Day wherever you get your podcasts.
You care about your money. Of course you do. So why aren't you listening to SoFi Daily? This podcast will keep you updated on the latest news in the stock market and how it could impact your financial life. Stay on top of what's happening. Listen to SoFi Daily wherever you get your podcasts. That's SoFi Daily wherever you get your podcasts.